Good morning and welcome to everyone to the Peace Alliance Hope Story Circle. We welcome you today. It's a beautiful day. It's in June and we have a wonderful guest today. The mission of the Peace Alliance is to empower civic action toward a culture of peace. So I welcome you. I'm Terry Mason. I'm on the board of directors. And with me facilitating today is Liz Gannon Graydon, who is also on the board of directors. And we have a wonderful special guest today. Her name is Wendy Green. And Wendy is a certified spiritual practitioner from Agape Spiritual Center in Los Angeles with Reverend Michael Beckwith. She also was the Peace Alliance's managing director for several years, some time ago, and has remained a good friend of ours. And we're just so delighted to have her join us here today. And without any further yammering, I'm going to invite Liz to open with a meditation today. I've unmuted you.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I just do want to bring into circle our beautiful Yelena, who usually does the opening meditation, and she was invited to do a weekend retreat. So that is where she's keeping us in her heart, and she was scheduled for this time period. So that's why she's not present with us today, but she is in our presence, and I wanted to draw her into the circle. And as part of our meditation today, what I wanted to do was, Wendy is going to take us very deep into our own personal stories, right? We've been doing these calls for many weeks now. And so I just wanted to meditate for a few minutes on our own personal stories and this moment we find ourselves in. I think there are two kinds of stories in our Hope Story Circle. There are two kinds of stories that I've been inviting people to meditate on in the last few months. And it's starting with our own personal biography, right? I want us to think about our own personal story. What is the story we tell about ourselves? What are those parts of our biography that feel really alive in this moment? And when I think of myself, I think about the fact that two really important parts of my biography are my father was a civil rights activist and a college professor, and my mother was an emergency room nurse, right? So I think about in this moment, as we've been going through first this period from COVID and now this period of unrest, I've been thinking how on purpose I've been drawing on those personal parts, that vision handed to me by my father. What's the vision of what a beloved community could look like? And from my mother, I've been thinking of that moment of who, the emergency room is all about triage. And as I look around the world, I think in this moment, what is needed in this moment, who needs me? And so I invite us all for a couple of minutes to just think about our own personal biography. What is the story of who we are? What is the story we tell ourselves about who we are? And what are those points of our biography that we feel we're drawing on in this moment that feel very alive? So we're going to ask you, as I said, Wendy's going to take us into story. So I just want you to think about that for a minute, and we're going to take a few breaths. And the second story that I think Wendy is going to invite us into is, what is our story of the world around us in this moment? What is our story about where we are and how we are? And what I have been thinking about in my own contemplation of this moment is, what in my personal biography gives me a special entry point into the larger story of where I think we are as a world, where we as there are as a society. So I want us to take a minute or two and just think about those two stories for the duration of this call. What is my personal biography? What are the parts of my story and those moments that feel very alive for me? And how do I feel that my own story, my own biography, my own story I tell about myself, give me this entry point into the larger conversation of what I have to offer and serve the community in this moment? So I'm going to ask you to just think about that for a minute. Okay, and in that moment, I hope we feel kind of grounded and connected with ourselves, with our story, the story of this moment. And I'm going to invite Wendy to kind of take us into a deep dive of how she's been thinking about her own story and what that means for her in this moment. Wendy, I am so honored to have you join us, and I'm so thankful for your willingness to be here and share.
Thank you, Liz, and thank you, Terry and Judy and everyone here. It's just a real privilege for me to be with the group today and reconnect in this way to my own beloved community. So the Peace Alliance is such a part of my heart and always, always will be. And so I'm so grateful to get to be here with you all, and particularly in this moment and the ways in which things that some of us have been talking about for years and generations, even as Liz was describing, are suddenly have had the covers thrown off, are have the bright spotlight shone on them. And one of the things that I want to share with you today is that as Terry said, my name is Wendy Green, and I am the descendant of slave owners. And that is something I have not said in a public setting, but maybe two times before in my life. And it's something that was certainly never talked about in my childhood. I think about all of my friends who are African-American descent and how much they talk about the fact that they are descended of slaves. But how often do we ever talk about that so many of us are descendant of slave owners? And I know this because my grandfather was a journalist, and he was also a political press secretary, and he did a lot of research in his retirement into our family history. And then, of course, we, his descendants, have continued that research and have uncovered not a whole lot more than he had already found, but now it's just all digital on ancestry.com, and learned that my family emigrated from England and Scotland, is where my roots are. And the first generation to come over from the United States was a chap named Robert Green on that particular side of my family. And he settled in Culpeper, Virginia, which is about 2 hours south of where I live right now. And apparently the story goes that his uncle, who he came over with, was a very strict Quaker, and Robert didn't care for that sort of stringent, you have to behave a certain way. So when he grew to be a man and built his own home and had his seven sons, his home was called Liberty Hall. And then he even had a quote, the history tells us there was a quote about, gentlemen, when you come here, you may be free to behave however you choose, right? To really just express your true self. Those of you who know me are sort of like, wow, that seems appropriate to how Wendy thinks to live, right? And though simultaneous to that, they own slaves. We have his will, where he lists out the people who gets left to which son, and which son gets this particular number of slaves and which one doesn't because, quote, he already has enough. And again, in my youth, this was never talked about, or if it ever came up, it was very much held as a, history's history, whatever. It has no bearing on our lives today. It doesn't matter. We had nothing to do with that. It doesn't make any difference. The past is the past. And yet in my own personal journey, I have come to the study and understanding and really began in earnest several years ago I live in Maryland outside of Baltimore. And when the Freddie Gray killing happened, my spiritual center and my friends, we came together in such a desperate agony of helplessness and just not knowing what we could possibly do. And as we came together, what we realized was we could start with ourselves. And so we started a group that we called Conversations on Racial Equality. And those of us with more experience in talking about these things, which is to say are predominantly our Black members and others, a woman whose husband is Black and she's white, so they have a mixed race family and deal with all of the social weirdness that comes with that. So they were our wonderful leaders, and they designed it as a book club, and we started with White Fragility, which I confess I've not yet completed because I find I have to take it in tiny doses because it's every word of it, I'm just like, oh my gosh, how did I never realize that before? How did I walk through this world so unconscious to what was staring me in the face all the time? And so in my own learning, in my own study, in my own exploration of my family history, I can no longer pretend that the fact I'm the descendant of slave owners has nothing to do with my life today. Because I know from that research and all of the social study and social sciences that are out there that, you know, statistically speaking, there is an extremely high probability that I have a genetic relative, a cousin who's Black. And statistically, and I should actually have the courage to say out loud what we all know to be true, which is because slave owners had sex with their slaves, and the majority of the time it was not consensual. Sally Hemings is the extraordinary rare story, right? So knowing statistically, there's a very high probability that's true. And I also know that statistically, there's a very high probability that that cousin is not as wealthy as I am, lives in a neighborhood with more crime than I do, has a much higher probability that they're during birth or her child would die, has a much higher probability of other illness or sickness, and has a much higher probability of difficulty getting a good job, getting a good education, and all of those things. And why would that be true of me and my cousin? A simple accident of birth. Nothing but that. And the systemic racism that exists in our world that I certainly, as a white person, was not conscious of, aware of, and I'm aware now that in my own ignorance, I have not just benefited from it, but perpetuated it without even knowing it existed. I didn't ask for that. I didn't want to be part of that, but the reality is that I am. It's part of my heritage and part of my world today. And as I can think about, you know, this and my own ancestry and my personal story, I'm aware that in many ways, my healing in this area and my exploration of this area began long before I even realized it was the area I was exploring. In 2005, I had the distinct privilege of taking a trip to Africa along with Reverend Michael Beckwith and a group from Agape. And of course, we had people of all heritages and all ethnicities. And it was really an extraordinary couple of weeks. We went to Ethiopia and we went to Ghana. And in Ethiopia, it was a delight. Like, the group had so much fun, and we were all so connected and really just one wonderful family. And then we went to Ghana, and it was if a switch was flipped and a wall dropped down, and there were the white people and there were the Black people. And I finally said to one of my Black friends, I don't understand. It's like all of a sudden I'm not part of the club. And she said, well, you're not. And the distinction is that Ethiopia has no history of slavery with Europe, right? There weren't the exportation of human beings. But in Ghana, they have slaving castles, and we went as a group to these amazing sites that they have. And it's an extraordinary experience, just life-changing at the level of the DNA for me. And on the castles, the Ghanaians have put signs that say, you know, really honor the sacred nature of the space you're walking into. And then also say, not all whites were guilty. Not all Blacks were innocent. Because particularly in Ghana, they're very aware that they're the descendants of the people who weren't captured, who weren't sold, and who weren't enslaved, but very likely are the descendants of those who went and caught those people and sold them to the white slave traders. And we all know, I'm sure many of you in your histories, and maybe even in mine, and I just haven't discovered it yet, probably have abolitionists who were a part of your ancestors, you know. So as we were in Ghana in one of the slaving castles, there's a room which was sort of the last room before they, not sort of, it is the last room that slaves stood before they were put onto the boats. And they told us the stories of the way in which the people were treated, and it was heartbreaking and abysmal and difficult to even think about. And so in that room, we were all so challenged. And we had been invited by Reverend Michael that everyone brought something all white to wear that day. And so it was really a sacred, almost initiation experience. And we stood there in the room, all of us, in our white clothes, and Reverend Michael started to laugh at one point. And we were all like everybody else is crying. We're like, dude, what are you doing? And you know, he has such a consciousness that everything exists right now. It's all one. And so time is an illusion. And he said, you're a healing presence for all those people right now. Standing in this room right now in the conscious way that we were, with a connection of love in a prayerful space, from our spiritual tradition. He said, they're seeing you as white apparitions and you're bringing love and healing into the space right now. And it was really an extraordinary concept to think that right here, right now, today, it's not just about that we can heal ourselves and those who we're with, but we could actually be a healing presence for our ancestors. And it had such a deep shift in our experience at the time. And it's something that I'm working more and more to bring forward for myself. Because knowing that I have that potential, knowing that my ancestors made the choices they made based on the social standards of the time, not saying they were bad or wrong or evil or anything. I mean, this was Liberty Hall, my uncle lived before the Revolutionary War, even that he died before the Revolutionary War here in the Americas. And, but again, as his descendant, I am aware that I've benefited from that. So now the work for me is around, well, what do I do with that knowledge, right? I still have an extraordinary emotional reaction, even talking about it here with you multiple times. I can feel the tears rising and feel just pain and helplessness, and even still mixed though with a strange pride that, I mean, Liberty Hall, like that's cool. It still stands today. When we leave, we're going to drive past it. We're going to stop by. So it's a very mixed thing. But one of my guideposts right now was I was once watching The Daily Show with Trevor Noah all before COVID, before this particular incidence of revealing the challenges of racism in our world, and really the call to action of today. And I remember hearing an activist talking about, you know, they were talking about what can we do? And she was talking about the power of truth and reconciliation efforts. And she said, but what's important for the United States in particular is to remember that truth comes before reconciliation. And that's not an accident. So for myself, where I am in my journey right now is just to get honest about it and begin the practice of speaking the truth of my own heritage, the truth of my own learning, the truth of my own journey, as honestly as I can, and then work to turn that toward the appropriate actions for me. And the good news in my world is that I'm part of the Peace Alliance. I know about the Peace Alliance. I know the work that we were doing and are doing today about all of the things. There's so much out there already that we do know about restorative justice, about truth and reconciliation processes, about real things that we can do and be a part of. And I am exceedingly committed to also doing the personal work no longer pretending it doesn't matter, no longer pretending that my fragility isn't part of the problem, and finding more ways to be part of the solution. So that's my story today. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, everybody. And that was the story that I wanted to share today with the group.
Wendy, thank you. And, you know, we have our meetings on Friday nights when we think about planning this. And one of the things that came very alive for me is I, in my own journey and in my own family journey, have been doing a lot of healing generational trauma, right? There's, on both sides of my family, there are a couple of people. And I look at the fact that in my own life, my father came from a family that had trauma, but he did the deep work of healing. And so he passed on a healed person to me. And it's fallen to my husband to do the kind of generational healing of trauma personally. But when Wendy told her story, I realized how much so much of the generational and personal trauma is so tied to the story of the larger who we are as a society, who we are as a world, and the deep commitment we need to make to healing that. And the idea you said that I've been sitting with for about whatever 12 hours, 15 hours, is that idea that when we heal in the present, we can not only heal the generations moving forward, right? I think about what I'm handing to my children and their children, but that idea that we could heal our ancestors, that idea that we could heal something moving forward is very powerful for me. So in a couple of minutes, right, in a minute, Terry's going to invite us to join small group work. And as we were thinking about the inquiry for today and for the small group work, I first want to remind you that Wendy told such a deep personal story that is painful, right? And you could even see the struggling to tell it publicly. So the small groups, I know you guys know, aren't recorded. So we're just going to ask you to really, as we move into the small groups, to be really aware of giving each person time to share. Being aware that everyone may be sharing something that is very difficult, for us to hold each other's stories with great care, you know, as Yelena would say, and to just say enough, to connect with your heart as you're listening, connect with your heart as you speak, and share what feels most alive and that you feel moved to speak in this moment. And so the inquiry we were thinking about is tied to both what Wendy shared and the opening contemplation. What are the parts of your biography that feel really alive to you right now? Those things that seem to give you an entree into the story we're living in this moment. Wendy, I think, did that so beautifully, right? She's grappling with this part of her history that gives her this entry point into healing. And we often hear the question, why me, right? You know, these things happened a long time ago. Why? Why is it my job? And my simple answer is because we're here, right? Because we're here. And so I look forward to, I like that we have this chance to go into the small groups to really think about what is the part of you that feels most alive, that in sharing it, you can do the most healing of the larger story of where we are now. If that sounds clear, Terry, I gave you a lot to work with, right? So sorry about that. So kind of, what is the part of your own biography that you feel alive and are tapping into now that you can feel can help us do the healing work of the moment we're in? I guess that's how I would say it. Before Terry breaks us up, does anyone want to clarify that? Okay. So I'm really thankful for your willingness to show up week after week and for our connection. And so Terry, if you want to take over.
Sure. So for those of you who are new, we're going to break into small groups. We're going to break into groups of hopefully three. There might be a two here and there. So you'll get a little invitation on your screen to join a breakout room. Go ahead and join it. And then you'll be with your small group. And just as Liz said, you can experience, you know, your agreements to be respectful, to say just enough, to listen with your heart.